Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded the sixth day of November.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets and the Monday WASDE and crop production reports, along with the train situation and distribution problems across the Midwest. Our panelists today include Amy Sage of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County, Mike Zuzula of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas, Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises from Mandeville, Louisiana, and our special panelist, Roy Huckabee from the Lynn Group out of Chicago, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. While you're there, order your tickets for our November 24th Farm Assets Conference, or you can call this number, 800-898-1065. Tickets are just $25. Full details at willag.org. Let's begin our discussion, as usual, with a list of topics from our panelists. We'll start with you, Roy Huckabee of the Lynn Group out of Chicago.
Meal.
We had 300,000 tons of meal canceled in export sales report this morning, and the meal market was trading down $3.50 when that report came out. And by the time you got to look in the report, meal was trading $5 higher.
All right. Well, we'll take that one up. Dan Zwicker, what's on your list?
How much more does this current rally have in it?
Right. Mike Zuzulo?
I guess blending both of those guys heading into the report, is this rail logistic issue going to be in the rearview mirror? Or are we going to have to trade that after the report?
Right. And Amy Sage?
I would say basis and harvest progress with farmer selling.
Okay, Amy, let's start with you since you're the one that's actually located out in the field, so to speak. How far along do you suppose harvest is in the area? I know a long way, but around the nation, what do you think?
Around the nation, I think we still have a little ways to go, but in this area, definitely we should be just about done in the next 7 to 10 days. But we're further along, I think, than some areas, especially to the east.
And basis in the area is reacting how to the end of harvest?
End of harvest, we are seeing basis improvement. We've seen levels improve in Decatur, which resonates to this area. And not that it's rallying by a huge stretch, but we have seen improvements across the board, you know, anywhere from a couple cents to a nickel. So that's another telltale sign we're almost done. So.
Amy Sage, of course, is with the Andersons right here in Champaign County. Mike Zuzulo, let's follow up with you a bit on this after Amy comments on this one as well, because you asked about rail. Amy, are you having difficulty getting locomotives to service the Andersons?
You bet we are. In fact, we're saying we need to be 10 days ahead of our needs in order to have a hope of getting rail on corn particularly. Selling early was obviously advantageous, but there's definite issues out there, and it's tough to get a train.
Wait, what does that mean, you need to be 10 days ahead? Does that mean you have to be calculating who's going to come to you 10 days from now?
10 days ahead of our needs, I guess. So, and that's across the Andersons facility. So, if people are looking at needing a unit to be on tracks, then basically you need to predict that 10 days out in order to even have a chance.
How different is that than normal?
Typically, you know, in a normal year, I'd say if you need to get a spot train, you could get one in 3 to 5 days.
Can I add a thought? Amy's talking about unit trains.
Yep.
Or shuttles. If you're a small guy and you've ordered 5 cars or 10 cars, your orders for September haven't been delivered yet in some cases.
Yeah, so small elevators filled up, can't get anything moved out, right? So how much of a problem does that create, for instance, across I'm going to guess this is a lot bigger problem in the Western Corn Belt than it is in the Eastern Corn Belt.
Well, I think that in Missouri there were some guys that thought they were going to have their elevators emptied in September, and when harvest started, they still had old crop corn in the elevator that hadn't been able to ship. So I think it's been a big issue. Yeah,
Michael?
Yeah, I guess I'm in the point here at this stage, Todd, going into the report, wondering whether this is really going to be a continued major factor heading into the report or right after the report, because we have seen the secondary rail car market drop below $1,000 this week. We're seeing the January basis here for Decatur, Illinois beans. It's rallied 20 cents in the last 2 days. I got to think that's pulling some beans away. And as Roy said before we went on the air, we had a negative export sale on the meal. So it looks like we're starting that demand rationing process, or we're in the maybe later stages even of that demand rationing process. But I think this goes back to the simple fact that in the 13-14 crop year, we figured out how tight beans were on the September stocks report by USDA, but I think the meal stocks were even tighter, and the crushers did not really appreciate how big of a problem they were going to face against the export market. But I guess I feel as though that's mostly in the rearview mirror heading into the report, that we are working into rationing the demand, and it looked like the rail car numbers from the AAR, as of their most latest information, was up about 15%. On grain movement year to date versus last year. So we are moving grain. It's just not where we need it to go, it sounds like.
And when you say in the rearview mirror, you mean as it relates to meal?
As it relates to feeding the bull in case we would get another supply increase. Now, if we got a supply decrease by USDA, yields didn't go up in beans, and the ending stocks went down from, say, 450 down to 420, that could feed the bull, in my opinion, and I think that's where the 100-day moving averages for corn, beans, and wheat are all really important to me, at least on the charts, when it comes to the daily lead month futures.
Dan Zwicker, do you have anything from CGB Enterprises to add to this conversation as it relates to distribution, your experience following the grain market for a lot of years, being located in Decatur at ADM for a few years and now at the Gulf?
Well, it's still a mess, but it seems to be slowly, grinding its way out of it. But I mean, that's going to take some time, but it's just, one of those situations that we have to deal with this year. And, it's not anything new. I mean, we've had problems for several months. And then when the big crop came on with those rains in August, it's just made it all the worse. But things seem to be grinding their way out. But it's still a mess. And it's probably going to be a mess for a while, trying to move inventory around.
How much of an increase in price for soybeans and or corn do you suppose has come because of the distribution problem? And normally I would think that would cause a decrease or a lack of ability to move, so people wouldn't want the grain to come. But really it's demand that's driving it, not the supply side. So I'm wondering how much of a pop in the marketplace have we had through this process, and how much is at risk of that pop? Anybody got an idea? Amy, you want to try that one?
Sure, yeah. I mean, we had over a dollar, I think $1.21 or something like that through the month of October in beans based on the situation. And I guess it is. It's a topic of conversation here on a daily basis. How long does it take to get this resolved, and how long will the market continue to reflect that? I guess our stance here is that we could see the bottom drop out of this at any day at some point when they feel like this has been factored in and that the needs will get met at some point in time. So I guess we're thinking that we're overpriced as is, and this could be the end any day of the week.
Roy Huckabee, how is it that Chicago as a whole is viewing the distribution problem? Do they understand what's happened in the Midwest and the grain trade and the trains and the inability to move this particular crop?
Well, I think that you have to recognize who you're talking to when you discuss this, because if you're the destination market, California, to be able to ensure that you've got corn supplies and you had shipments that were late, you've doubled up. The Group 3 Nebraska corn traded at 25 under on Monday, and the best offer you can find today is 5 under. So much like what Michael said, is that we've seen a very rapid basis appreciation here in the last few days. But any time that I see that, I tend to go look at freight because I think it's freight that's behind it. In 2 weeks ago, we traded Illinois freight at 11 times tariff. And today we're at 7.5 times tariff, maybe 7 times tariff. St. Louis corn values went from 55 under to 8 under. And now we've gotten to this level on the interior where I think the elevators still have stuff they need to move just to stay liquid. And that's what Amy's referring to. So you find some trucks moving grain at these levels. But what's happened is the freights continue to come down. Now the prices at the destination markets, I think barge corn's down 10, 12, 15 cents here in the last 7 or 8 days. So we still have a crop around our neck. And when we get a chance to move it, we're still trying to stay liquid. I think the big cost of freight into the destination markets has opened us up to the potential of imports again. And I think the cancellation of meal sales, it has a lot to do with the fact that our export meal basis is 85, 88 over, and Brazil's at 35 over. Today I actually offered at 31 over. And if you get to their new crop in February, they're offered at 5, 6, 7 over. So U.S. meal can't stay up here and still do this business. So I think that, for me, I'm seeing a lot of potential air around this market as people trade off of things they don't really understand.
Oh, that would let air out of this marketplace. Are you talking about potential imports into the southeast of corn, soybeans, bean meal, things?
Of meal, soybean meal.
Just meal. Okay.
I can't make corn work. South American corn is offered at about $8 or $9 a ton under U.S. corn, and I just can't make that work.
Okay.
But meal at $50 a ton cheaper than U.S. meal delivered into the southeast, that could work all day long. Well, I think that if you go back and look at the expirations in meal, each expiration has been just stupid. I mean, big rallies, big breaks. And we've created it ourselves. The user has never had a chance to buy meal very gracefully, not at prices that he felt comfortable with. Alternatives have been cheaper, and basis levels have never been discounted because of the tight bean carryouts. So he's got basis booked in some cases, but he hasn't booked the future. So every time you get ready to expire, he's in here to buy the expiring option to price his basis sales. And it's just created a great deal of volatility in the expiring options. And what happened in meal today is no different.
Anybody got some discussion points for the USDA WASDE and crop production reports? They're due out the 10th, which is Monday, of course, at 11 a.m. Central Time. The numbers really, from the average trade guesses, aren't very much different than what has been put out by USDA at this point. Are there things that we need to be wary of, Dan?
Well, the trend has been SC Stone's been the big one, and then Informa would come in with a little more moderate report, and then USDA would come in to be the smallest one. I mean, that's kind of been the trend since September, and I wouldn't be a bit surprised to see that happen again because yeah, I noticed in the Infoma report the other day is they emphasized that they used USDA's acres. So that almost tells me that they're uncomfortable using USDA's current acres. And we all know that there's big discrepancies between the FSA reported acres and the acres that USDA is using. But that issue may not be resolved until January, and maybe USDA may end up being right. I don't think they are. I think that this is a bad miss for them on acres. And so I kind of expect to see another downward revision in acres on the November report and then a further reduction as we go into January. So I think that any kind of yield increases could be offset by decreases in acreage. and therefore the supply doesn't get any bigger. And the bear, I mean, I think that's what's happened to the short here. I mean, he's had to send money to Chicago. And, you know, it started all with that, you know, ridiculously high number that F.C. Stone came out with, I think, on the September report. And if you, you know, you couldn't get the market to, or was it the October report? If you couldn't have got the market to go down with that big report, that was the end of it. You saw the biggest numbers, and the market's been up ever since. So, you know, nothing's going to be considered as bullish because we've, you know, we got plenty of crop. It's just the idea that supplies are not getting bigger.
Are you, Dan, at this point, friendly to sideways the market for corn and soybeans?
Well, I think we're in a tricky point here. I mean, I'm a seasonal watcher pretty close. I watch the seasonals, and this is a time that the seasonals would imply that the market would have some downside price vulnerability as you go into late November, early December. I mean, usually beans roll out of an early October low and really don't look back. They do have a period of softness in November, but corn has a strong tendency of going back to the lows, but I don't think we're going to do that, at least not right now. So if the USDA report can't knock this thing down and the bears can't get it knocked, start trending down by the middle part of next week, I think we're going to go counter seasonally higher in November, maybe all the way into Thanksgiving, and then we'll break toward the end of the year.
Mike, how about you?
I guess, you know, taking it from another angle, I guess the fact that the yen has moved so sharply higher against the dollar, and today the dollar was less than 1 point from its 2010 high, and then guess what? The next stop is the 2008 highs. But if you look at that, I think you've probably taken away a good chunk of the reason why the investor community would want to reallocate and continue to reallocate assets into the ag sector, especially the grain market, without something like a weather market, like an El Nino market. That's still very much possible, and I don't want to discount that, but unlike the previous three reports when we had the dollar and the investor community on our side, I could see where this would be a community that the investor community that would balk at wanting to buy more grains unless you did get that supply cut that Dan was talking about via acres, or surprise the trade with the lower corn test weights that I've heard about being funneled into the yield data, or the falling bean yields in some of the later harvested crop in the eastern bean belt being funneled into the yield data this early by USDA. But I guess I'm kind of in a mindset that investor group and that asset was really a strong play to keep us from going as low as some had predicted because of the fact that the supply-demand fundamentals look so negative.
So without them, you're lower, right? Is that correct?
If the USDA can't give you a reason to buy it, then I would say the investor community is not going to want to pick up any more grain at this stage.
So I've got a seasonal down, but really feeling friendly to the market, I think, out of Dan. A lower if we don't get a reason for the outside markets to invest from Mike.
Well, I don't think the outside markets, I mean, they're important, and there's no doubt about it that, you know, the strength in the dollar is coming from, you know, Japan's Gonzalez fiscal stimulus, or whatever they want to call it, or quantitative easing. And, you know, I think the race to the bottom in world currencies will probably continue. And before it's all over with, we're probably going to have another one of those in the United States. So I'm not too sure at the moment dollar strength is basically hindering export activity at the moment. If anything, it might encourage some buyers to come off the bench before the dollar goes higher.
Yeah, and I'm not talking about exports, Dan. I'm just talking about the investors allocating funds. So it'd be more.
Well, investors got those guys have a lot of free money out there in New York, and they're too big to fail. So I mean they can buy commodities, some of the cheapest that they've been able to buy in the last 4 years. So I think, you know, until the crop gets hedged up, I mean, that's going to be the problem here. As long as it's in farmers' hands, it's going to have difficulty going higher. But once all that selling pressure is absorbed into the market, I think the investor community could run this thing a whole lot higher than anybody thinks.
Amy, my guess is that you're looking at the fundamentals and saying, man, we have a lot of crop in the bin, not only here in Illinois, but other places. Is that right?
That is correct. Anderson's in general is actually using a production number of 14.8, and I guess that's exactly, and it is hard not to look out the back door here, but we are just looking at a ton of corn and beans for that matter too. So you're exactly right. We're looking at a big production number and kind of in that camp too of without some type of reason to spark buying interest, it's hard from our angle to grasp, you know, a big rally at this point.
Okay, so 14.8 comparison, by the way, to 14.475, which is the October number from USDA. That leaves Roy Huckabee. What's your thought on
that you have to recognize that we're not in a vacuum, and that there's the whole big world out there besides what goes on here in the U.S., and weather this time of the year, the only thing that I see is very important is what's going on in South America. And we were dry in Brazil, and that delayed some planting in Mato Grosso, and it helped to inspire this little rally that we've had. But I'm still using 93 million tons for Brazil's bean production, and I don't know how the market can take a 500 million carryout in the U.S. and add that to the world supply that comes on here in February, March, and April, and think that beans should go a whole lot higher. I think you're swimming in beans. I think your carryout will be up again. Your world carryouts are way ahead of what they've been over the last 3 or 4 years. I know prices are down, but I see more pressure coming. And of corn's much the same way. The world's never really been overburdened with wheat supplies. The U.S. has, but not the world. But the world is swimming in corn. The world is swimming in beans. And I think that it's very hard for me to see the market able to develop a bullish move in above what we've done. I still see what we've done here in the last 2 months as a rally in a bear market.
That's an interesting way to term it, a rally in a bear market. I was thinking about this, that all of you seem to be in the right place at this point, but that we are at the pivotal point in this marketplace, potentially, because we're certainly drastically lower than we have been, but we're higher off at least the lows at this point. And I don't know that farmers understand exactly what comes next in this market, and I don't know where to ask you to go at this point.
I don't know if anybody knows.
I
think you have to admit that one thing that you have to consider when you're – this is kind of back in the days when we were trading prices below loan rate and all that kind of stuff. You got to be awful careful being bearish when you're underneath loan rates, and I think you got to be awful careful being bearish when you're under cost production. Now, this is the first true case – of our freedom to farm type movement that was initiated back in the mid-90s, where we really don't have any loans, we don't have any reserves, grain reserves, and all this kind of stuff. So, you know, if you're a true believer in supply and demand, then we should work our way out of this mess somehow, somewhere down the road. And I mean, there's no shortages of people telling the farmer to sell. I mean, he doesn't need to buy any newsletters at all because, I mean, the newsletter writers, if they're telling them that to sell, I mean, grain merchants and commodity brokers and market advisors, I mean, everybody's telling the farmer to sell. And I mean, I was always taught that long crops you store and short crops you sell at harvest. So I don't know where everybody wants to get in such a hurry to sell this crop. I like to know which economics 101 book that they learned that in college. I mean, I'm willing to let supply and demand work a little bit, you know.
Well, let's talk about that for a moment, because you're talking about the cost of production, and I've got a chart up that shows my returns to real estate. And at tonight's closes, on a 200 bushel yield on corn, I'm making $297 an acre. So if I'm a landowner and I don't have a payment for land rent, I'm making $300 an acre for my ground. If I've got to buy or rent ground from somebody, all I'm paying is a $300 land rent. And we know there's a lot of people out there with rents that are higher than $300. On 225 bushel corn, and we've just done that. We don't know if we're going to be able to do that again or not. But in Illinois, I've got a lot of landowners that have grown 270, 250, 280 bushel corn on the entire farm, not just on certain fields. And a 225 bushel corn yield gives me a $391 return to land. Those bean numbers, 60 bushel beans gives me $396, and 75 bushel beans gives me $538 to land cost. So I think that when you look at the new crop values, these 15 corn is up here trading 416, and I think that gives you some returns here that you need to consider. No, 15 beans are trading at 1006, and I think that gives you some returns that you need to consider. And I wouldn't go out and have, you know, three-fourths of my crop sold, but I'd certainly be getting some pricing done, because I don't think it takes much. I'm like Amy. I think this market could correct on you at any time.
Thanks, Zuzalo. You want to jump in?
I'll throw this out. I think that when I get hired by somebody, they usually hire me on the blending the macro and the supply-demand fundamentals, and I enjoy the outside markets a lot, maybe too much. And I sit here and I see that the Bank of Japan is going up to something like 150 to 200% of GDP in terms of what they're willing to loan. The European Central Bank today said they are ready to turn on the spigots. The Chinese PMI came out today, and now everybody in the trade, or many in the trade, think that we're going to see them ease more monetary policy into their
economy.
They've
already put $116 billion into their economy.
And so I sit back and I say to myself, in the last 7 years, global quantitative easing by the central banks have failed to stimulate the global economy, meaning that demand pull inflation and meaning growing consumption and rising wages. And that's typically not very good for commodities. And so I have to pick my points to be able to make recommendations to sell. And that's what I'm in the middle of wading through. And I've been doing this just around 20 years, so I know very little compared to a lot of guys on this phone right now. But that makes me very nervous, because it reminds me of what happened in 97 with the Russians and the fact that their ruble's collapsing again. It reminds me of the Asian financial crisis that you brought up last week, Todd. And it makes me start to think that, is there a period of 3 to 5 years, even though supply-demand could come around and be more supportive to the prices, we have these things that we're going to have to pay for, and that's really what's in the middle of my desk right now as far as trying to work through.
Interesting that you brought up the Asian crisis. Of course, Dan mentioned Freedom to Farm. Those two things happened at the same time the last time around, Dan.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's why I'm a technical trader. I mean, I draw trend lines, and I watch moving averages and let the market tell me what to do. And the trend's been up since first part of October. I mean, the short has sent money to Chicago. Now, if he wants to continue to send money to Chicago, that's fine. I'll take it.
I don't think we've solved any problems here today. Not yet.
Kind of like the election, probably.
I mean, Chicago will take that money. It won't take long to take it. Now, when this thing turns down, I'll be short, but I'm going to be a technical trader. I'm just going to be with the system, and I'll go back and forth. That's why, you know, fundamentals are all fun to talk about, but follow the money in and out of the market. I guess that's where I'm at.
Can I ask you a technical question? Would you, this is Roy, would you agree that if we take out this week's lows, that this market's no longer in an uptrend?
Yeah, so far it's an inside week.
Yeah. If you take out this week's lows, this market will turn down.
If you take out yesterday's lows, which were reversals, and they basically turn into failures, that would probably turn my system short.
Right. That's what I see, too.
But if we take out last week's highs, I think these corn's going into the 390s, and I think January beans are going to go on up into the 1080s, and we're going to take the shorts to the cleaners one more time.
I see much the same thing that you're talking about, but I'm having a hard time building a bullish strategy into the market.
I know. You can't look at the fundamentals to talk that. that's why I'm going to Texas and just look at the screen and ain't going to talk to anybody about the fundamentals.
Amy, what do you see basis doing here going into December? Is with the harvest wrapping up or getting close to wrapping up, do you see that getting better, or is it going to depend on the futures move?
It probably depend on futures a little bit, but I do think that we'll continue to strengthen going into December, at least in this area. I don't think we're going to see throughout the rest of the year, though, the strong basis levels that we have in the past just because of how much is out there. But guys like to move corn, Jan, Feb, March. Elevator will flip their emergency storage this winter, and so that'll keep some pressure on it. But I think going into December, we should see it continue to strengthen, people grabbing the last bushels, and then maybe stay under pressure from there over the winter months until we fill up again.
Todd, there's another part of the world I keep bringing up, other things to talk about, if I can. There's no corn program off the PNW. PNW corn is bid 85 over, just like the Gulf is. And there's a lot of corn in North Dakota and South Dakota and Minnesota that would normally go to the PNW. They're all looking for homes.
And this is a locomotive problem, right? I mean, they just can't get the cars or the locomotives to move it.
No, I don't think there's an Asian corn program off the PNW. That's the problem. I mean, if you had a corn program, you'd be trying to get corn to go to the PNW, and there's no interest in corn to the PNW at all. No bids.
Well, maybe we'll have a warm and rainy winter, and all these corn piles start rotting. We'll get rid of a billion bushels of it, and the elevator gets stuck with it.
You're just going to build
shame
fundamentals.
Shame on you.
He's going to build fundamentals to meet his technical needs.
Let it turn all black on him.
I think we got a few people that just realized they got big corn piles outside.
I think that's what we need, is a nice, warm, rainy winter. A lot of wind, a lot of wind storms. Just keep blowing that plastic off.
Shame on you, Todd.
I think I'm going to Texas, too. Florida or somewhere.
Okay, so back to the Northwestern Corn Belt. This is not a new problem, though, for them. It's just a complicated problem because they didn't empty out this summer, did they? I don't think they were able to move very much of their corn out, so they're just piling up, right, in that area?
I think they managed to get empty, but you're talking about a part of the world that has the most storage space of anybody relative to their crop size. No, I think this is an issue that will last all through the year, and I think that those big sucking sounds from Blair and Columbus, they'll take a lot of that corn in there, but that frees up some Nebraska corn too. So I just think that the northern tier of states has a lot of corn, and they're going to be looking for a place to sell it. So I'd like to be bullish on the carries and expect the basis levels to firm up here, but I think the firmness that you get is short-lived into December, maybe into early January. When you get into February and March, you've got people looking for a place to sell corn.
Yeah, so you think that basis levels, because of what's in the Northwest, will drop how far to the east, all the way to Decatur or further?
Well, it depends on how the railroads perform. I think that if the railroads perform, you end up spreading that corn everywhere. If the railroads don't perform, then you got an issue.
Well, they haven't performed yet.
The BN's got a couple of they announced a couple of auctions this week. They've got six more trains that they're going to put into the system. They've got a December train they're going to auction off today and a January train to auction off today, and then they'll auction off two more January trains on the 12th and two more January trains on the 19th. So they're still trying to provide stuff for the unitrain shippers or the shuttles. The UP had three trains that expired at the end of October. They just restarted them in November. But they've got five more trains that expire here in November, and I think they're going to break those trains up to give some of these smaller shippers cars that they've been leaving out. I know the rail freight has come way down, and I saw the wheat basis at the Gulf back off because the Nebraska hard wheat guys, the minute they got cheap freight available, they were trying to move it to those 200 over bids at the Gulf, and the hard wheat rail bids are now 150 over. So as the board has come down, or as the rail freight has come down from $6,000 a car on the BN to about $1,200 offered, I think, at one point yesterday, that has put pressure on basis levels in a destination market. And I think that's exactly what we'll be seeing is when rail is available and moving freely, all the basis levels will weaken as we get more of these interior supplies moving into a destination market.
Let me see if I can summarize this so that it makes some sense as a whole across all four of you. And I think this is right, but I'm not certain that distribution, in this case, the trains, are going to cause the problem throughout the system for the coming, let's call it the year, and that basis levels are likely to jump sharply when an end user really needs grain, which may be more often than not, and that producers are going to have to watch for the pops more eagerly than they have in the past because they're likely to be very large. But in general, it will be a weak market. Does that make some sense? Am I right? I think that's what I've garnered from
now, Don't put me in the category of the weak. I'm not going to be in that weak market.
Okay. Well, as soon as I said that, I didn't think you would be there. So I was like,
you know, Illinois is lucky. They got a big hole down there in Decatur that needs to be fed every day. So, give Decatur an opportunity and they'll grind through it.
Let's do the final word. Okay. Dan Zwicker, let's start with a final word from you, please.
You know, I guess I want to maintain a friendly tone because I kind of want to be more of a contrarian than probably anybody else. But I also understand that farmers do raise a crop to generate revenue and pay bills and get ready to plant another crop. And so I guess I do think, you know, any kind of price strength in here is probably an opportunity to at least put floors underneath it with minimum contracts. I'm not too crazy about min-max unless it's a real wide one. I don't like a lot of these derivatives. But I do think that he should get cash and then stay open somehow, take advantage of a rally maybe into spring.
Roy Huckabee of the Lynn Group out of Chicago.
I think that with tonight's prices, you're not losing any acres for next year. You're actually you're going to keep some of your bean acres that flow into corn. And instead of having 88 million acres of corn, you might have 91 or 92. I think it's important for the farmer to price his new crop. I'd like to buy these 15 $4 puts and sell 450 calls and 350 puts. You can do it tonight for about a 7 cent credit. In beans, I feel the same way. You can buy a $10 November bean put tonight, sell an $11 call and a $9 put, about even money, and it gives you a floor under at least part of your markets. I'm not doing a lot, but you got to do 20 or 25% of your crop, I think.
Mike Zuzulo from Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. And Mike, I think there was a question that we did not take up on ethanol you wanted to talk about, too, before you get to your final word.
Well, the only thing I noticed was we had a 13% jump in the last 2 days in ethanol, and I kept scratching around with colleagues in the ethanol industry and colleagues in Chicago trying to find out whether anything was going on with the RFS mandate. The only thing I got back was the logistical problem similar to the meal, but that just didn't seem to wash with me. The thing that I saw technically was that the ethanol is looking very sharp, and I wonder if it's because the natural gas has jumped about 25% in the last 2 weeks, and I didn't know if any of the others had any kind of insight on that or not.
Peace Ethanol closed at the 186 tonight, and Argo is bid 209. So there's your logistics issue.
Your final word, Michael.
A short-term post report. Watch that 100-day moving average for price direction and trend. Medium-term, watch the El Nino forecasts by the Australian Bureau of Meteorology. And also, like we were talking about, try and separate your cash basis from the futures market, especially when we're talking about corn, but beans as well.
Amy Sage of the Andersons.
Keep an eye out for these rallies in old and new crop. Definitely in agreement that we probably need to be taking advantage by at least locking in a floor and locking in some hopefully profitable levels for next year and being flexible with that plan throughout the remainder of the year. And again, keep the eye for basis as well, especially going into the end of the year.
That wraps up this November the 6th edition of Commodity Week. Our thanks to our panelists, including Amy Sage of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County, Mike Zuzalo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas, Dan Zwicker from CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana, and Roy Huckabee of the Lynn Group out of Chicago, Illinois. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You have a great weekend.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.